Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Straight. Guns don't kill people. I do.
Channel 62 has the lowest ratings in the history of television. What they need is a new station manager.
No, not him. Forget it. No way.
A man of action. A man of courage. A man of vision.
What's your name?
Billy.
Billy what?
What they get is a man so desperate, he'll put anyone on the air.
Hey, Stanley.
Yeah, George?
How would you like your own TV show?
Okay. You get the drink from the fire hose! Okay, ready?
Yeah!
Open wide!
We'll have
He's Conan the Librarian.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's a podcast where we rewatch old movies and see if they hold up today, right now, in this moment. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is
Blaine Waters.
And JM is not here. He died. His tongue swelled up and his brains exploded and his eyes leaked out of his skull. He has the common cold.
Okay.
He's
wondering
sick.
Where you're going.
So it's just us here, and we do have a special guest today, Nug Nargang from the Illusionoid podcast.
Yes, brothers in Antica, if you will.
Yeah. From Antica Network as well.
It's like a cult.
We are a very creepy cult.
Good costumes, though.
Yeah.
Good drinks.
Phenomenal drinks.
And you've joined us to talk about UHF, the 1989 movie starring Weird Al Yankovic.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a Weird Al vehicle.
Yeah, except maybe eclipsed by Michael Richards.
Do you think so?
Well, I don't know. Just because of maybe stuff that's come up lately.
And maybe eclipsed for him by other things.
Like the eclipse.
Yeah, that's right. But before we get into that, we should thank our sponsors, HelloFresh and Endy Mattress. Both of them are great. You should check them out. We should also thank our Patreon subscribers. Those are the folks who give us $15 a month. And in return, they get the podcast early. They get other special bonus content. Like, we just dropped an episode today, which will be like last week.
Yeah.
Just for Patreons.
Yeah, so if you pledge any amount a month, you get that bonus content for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do that.
Yeah, please. That'd be great.
So we're here to talk about UHF, Weird Al, 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine, when was the first time that you saw this film?
I feel like I saw it, like, I always start these podcasts by being like, oh, I saw it at a sleepover, like, with friends. I think I saw this, like, on my own, alone, depressed at night, in like my basement as a teenager, just flicking through the channels. And I thought it was just so strange and so weird.
Oh.
I don't know if they have someone
wow, on
that.
Point.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But it was, I loved it, and I never thought about it again after seeing it that first time. I saw it. I loved it entirely. I laughed a lot. I thought it was so silly and kind of stupid, but I've since grown to really love stupid humor.
You have to dare to be stupid.
You have to, right,
absolutely.
Exactly.
As Weird Al.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
speak
yeah.
to us.
Yeah, I'm eating my own words. I just have to eat it. Yeah. Okay. We'll revisit that one later. But I loved it, and I hadn't seen it since then, I think. So it was crazy to rewatch it. We, Rob and JM and I, all went to the Royal screening of UHF this Saturday night, and it it was so much fun to be there with people that loved the movie, like loved this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would like
all four of them.
there was like 40 people there.
Yeah. It was pretty full.
Yeah. There was a guy who dressed up as like in Amish attire to sing Amish Paradise.
No, I think he was an Orthodox Jew.
Oh, okay. Then I might have insulted him.
They go to the movies too.
Yeah. Okay. I might have heard him. But that's when I first saw it. What about you, Nog?
I saw it with some friends of mine in high school. This was right 1989, right when I got into high school.
Oh. Okay.
And this was me and my friends. Somebody had a driver's license, and we all piled in a car and drove to London, Ontario, and watched this in a theater.
How long a trip was that? Was that like
about
a big
an hour,
trip?
About an hour trip. And it was like our first outing without parents. Like, we're going to London to watch a movie.
That's
and so
awesome.
We went to London, and we still, through Facebook messages, will reference this movie constantly. There are so many lines and so many bits in this movie that are so oddly placed and yet are integral to the movie.
Right.
That are just things we say to each other, and that's just how it is from now on. So
yeah, it's like the fingerprint of your relationship with
really
your friends.
It really is. For this group of friends, this was the moment, like, this solidified it. We went through this war together, and that was the movie.
Right. So if like an illusionoid robot came in and took over one of you, you would know. You would know right away.
I would know immediately if we were replaced by a symbiote or a clone. I would know.
You just have to do the UHF references.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think I noticed you're wearing a UHF t-shirt.
Yeah, I am, actually.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I do legitimately love this movie.
It says U62.
U62, which is the channel of the station.
It has the two mops.
Has two mops, Wheel of Fish, the transmitter, the whole thing.
Oh my God. But it doesn't have a badge.
No. Don't need it.
Yeah,
I do legitimately love this movie. I owned it on DVD and I bought it on Blu-ray for all the extra features.
Nice.
There's a real neat thing, all these cut scenes from the movie on the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray's two-sided so they could pack in all the extra stuff.
Oh, I loved when they did that.
And so when you, but some of the menus on the one side, but if you want to watch something, some of them are on the other side.
Okay.
So Weird Al will come in on the screen and go, "It's on the other side. You have to take it out and flip it over to watch this. It's on the other side of this DVD." And then when you hit play on it again, he gets angrier. And then he comes out like three or four times and just goes, "What are you doing? Flip it over. It says right." Like, it's so funny. Just this menu is amazing.
That's great. He's so good at beating a dead horse in new ways.
Yes.
Like, it's just so funny.
Not for more blood, just for more beating.
Yeah, just for more. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And somehow doesn't get old. It's so great. What about you, Rob? When did you first see it?
You know, I saw it at some point, maybe when I was in university. I like was a Weird Al fan growing up. You know, I think like a lot of people, he was sort of like an entryway into music, into pop music.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't have like an older brother to give you Fugazi records or something, you had to sort of like do with like polka versions of Queen songs or whatever. And then eventually, you know, you listen to other stuff and you sort of move on from Weird Al. And for a while, he sort of seems like childish. So you sort of like, I don't know, I sort of got over him for a while. And then as I got older and wiser and was able to sort of reintegrate all that stuff, you know, I sort of like learned to love him again, and I saw him in concert at one point. It was really funny. He still, like, I think has his, like, you know, his chops. He sort of like made like a resurgence recently. Like, he was the musical conductor of Comedy Bang Bang for the last couple of seasons.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, he's become like, you know, hip and cool again. So I remember seeing it sometime. I think the humor of this particular movie was a little bit like stranger than the regular Weird Al sort of stuff. Like the stuff that he became really popular with, like the MTV size pop music parodies, that stuff is easy to get for a kid or for a younger person. The humor
and the parodies can kind of stand their own as jokes too. Like you don't need to get what they're parodying it for it to be funny.
Yeah.
And that's where Weird Al really chimed in.
Yeah, but I was looking forward to rewatching it to recritically evaluate Weird Al cinematically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there's a whole other component to this, which I didn't realize until you talked about his music, but he does have so much music. And as kids, like you liked the music as a kid.
Well, I think that was the main thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, he was on MTV. He hosted like programs on MTV, but he was like all about like the music video. Like he really took advantage of that format.
Yeah, for sure. That was his movies. And
like his songs were so like easily, you know, you could put them on like a compilation tape or something like that.
What about you now? Did you listen to it?
I've massive Weird Al fan. I've been to three concerts. You know, the movies, there's the big box set that's coming out near the end of this year that is everything he's ever done.
Wow.
On vinyl in a box that looks like an accordion.
Right.
It's going to be about $500. I think it's money well spent. but he does parody the songs, and I took some music classes in university, and I looked at some of his music, and what's interesting is that the parodies, you get it.
within the first verse and chorus, you get it. Oh, so man, all of his parodies are one verse and one chorus shorter. He clips them so they're shorter songs.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
So
that
you don't have, he doesn't actually beat the dead horse to death.
Wow, I didn't know that.
He's like, you get it, I'm getting out of here quicker.
Yeah.
But they're still like musically accurate. Like,
well, his band is full of phenomenal musicians.
Yeah.
And every now and then, the musicians that he's parodying will say, well, why don't I just play on the track?
Right.
So at the time of UHF, when he did the, which we'll talk about the Beverly Hillbillies thing,
right.
That's actually Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits playing on the track. And then on a later album, he was doing a parody of Ben Folds, and Ben's like, just, I'll play. And so he plays on the track. So it's just, everybody loves, there's only like two people in history who said no to Weird Al.
Right.
So it's a very interesting where all the musicians are like, yeah, I want to be parodied by Weird Al. This is the best.
Yeah. Like Paul McCartney or something?
Paul McCartney and Prince. Billy Joel once said no. And then the Paul McCartney one, he wanted to do Live and Let Die as Chicken Pot Pie, which he does live.
Stupid.
Which he does live, but Paul McCartney wouldn't let him record it. He said, go ahead and do it live, but you can't record it.
Right.
But McCartney loves it, so.
Yeah, because he's a vegetarian. Like when he was on The Simpsons, he said that like Lisa could never stop being a vegetarian.
Right.
Like that was his stipulation for appearing.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to run down the movie, Rob?
I sure do. I will try. It's just sort of all over the place.
It's hard because as we were talking about before the podcast, Nuggie, you brought up the fact that like this is a really simple story.
It's an amazingly simple story.
And it's been done to death a bunch of times since and before. But the jokes, these deviations are so hard to bring into focus.
And even the things like, we'll talk about it, but even the scenes like, when the roommates don't know what to do. We've lost our jobs. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Been there.
Right? Yeah. We've all been there, but they're doing the oddest things in that scene and not talking about them.
Yeah.
And that's the whole movie
the
is that.
Humor of that.
Just very much like throwaway jokes that are the weirdest things you've ever heard and no one's reacting to them.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Okay. Well, starts with a sort of familiar sort of scene. There's a explorer in a wide brimmed hat. He's sort of tromping through the jungle, finds the ruins of a temple. And it's like a basic Indiana Jones parody. We've seen it a bazillion times, but there's some good stuff in it. He like whips off one of the lackey's arms.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
And he gets to
reactions of everything. Yeah, like everything is like just what happened in the movie, but just so much bigger and stupider.
Like all the things, if you watch that movie as a kid and you watched him whip the gun out of his hand, you're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if he took his arm off? Well, Al does it in this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he gets to the treasure and it's an Oscar statuette.
Right. It can't be. It's trademarked.
Oh.
So if you look at the statue, instead of holding a thing, it's covering its crotch.
It's an Oscar.
an Oscar. The only thing you can see is its ass.
Yeah.
So there
you
go.
Academy wouldn't let it.
Oh, wow. That's so stupid. Great.
It's ridiculous.
And they did not nominate him for this either.
Oddly.
How do you take a dig at them? You don't bite the hand that feeds. But so he does like the whole like weighing the sand thing, but at the last minute he just like tosses the bag away. Mm-hmm. And of course the big rolling rock comes after him and it chases him.
Yeah, before that the ceiling caves in, all these rocks fall on his head, but they're all foam, so he just keeps,
running.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
And it chases him like out of the temple, through the streets of Paris, through the desert.
Yeah.
And finally like flattens him, squashes him. He's flatter than a pancake. This is the end of our hero. But it's a daydream. It's a daydream by a man in a lowly job. Mm-hmm. It's George Newman. This is the character that Weird Al is playing.
Yeah.
He's flipping burgers at some...
with no hairnet.
No,
I'm just going to say
now.
No, he has a lot of hair.
Well, so does his buddy Buck.
Yeah.
They both have a tremendous amount of hair.
They probably need double nets for that.
Double that up.
But they're like really despondent because they hate their jobs and they think that they're two guys with imagination and it just doesn't seem like there's any opportunities for them there, and they get fired.
I think he insults
Big Edna.
Oh, yeah, that's right, to her back.
And they do that wonderful, it's so cartoon. It's like a human cartoon.
Yeah.
She carries them out, one in each hand, by their belts, and hurls them into the air. And you hear they leave frame, and the camera backs away, and it's a good 500 feet back from the restaurant. She goes back inside, and then they land, and they're screaming the whole time.
It's so, it's very cartoon. cartoony. It's very stupid, but it's like, I don't, there's something about it that's so endearing and that makes me laugh and then laugh despite myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to
laugh. You laugh and then go, oh God, why am I laughing?
Why am I laughing? But they got me to laugh. So
this sort of style worked, I think, a lot better in the 80s, or at least there was like a lot more of it. Like it's very reminiscent of like Pee Wee Herman and like, I don't know, Devo videos.
Right. Yeah.
It's like a very off the wall sort of like campy.
And also, as we said, it's a story that's been done to death in many, many movies before this and after. So if you're going to do the same thing, do it bigger and worse or make fun of it. This is almost a parody of all those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that way, it's almost a parody of itself.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to do that. So that's the meaning of the
parody.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and all the bits.
Russian dolls.
Yeah. It's a Russian doll of a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so they don't have any job. They go back to their apartment. They live next to a karate studio and they always hear like people being thrown against the wall. At one point, like a fist like punches through and Weird Al can read the time from the watch.
Oh, I'm late. He's reading the time on the watch.
Yeah. This is weird because a lot of the times we go back to 80s and 90s movies and we see like huge racial stereotypes. We're like, oh my God, this movie did not age well. But if the movie's done well, I mean, it's hard because in the theater, so many people laughed at that. It was a very multicultural theater and so many people laughed at Korean karate instructor. And it was just, I don't know. It's hard because it was definitely a stereotype, but it's also a parody of that stereotype.
Yeah. Well, and Jede Watanabe, who was Kumi, was Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles.
Mm-hmm.
So he's parodying his own part in 16 Candles as the Asian stereotype.
Right. Yeah.
It's deep.
He's reclaiming it.
Yeah. And I love that he just calls people stupid when they don't understand how to do karate. His whole thing is calling people stupid.
Yeah. It's so absurd. Yeah. Like, is that funny? It is.
It's very funny. Reason.
He also has a scene with his girlfriend, Victoria Jackson. Mm-hmm. And like the acting in this is like so over the top. It's like some sort of like unperformance, like Brechtian uber performance or something.
Like he's so over the top, but she's the most subdued character.
And
on
she was bananas on Saturday Night Live and currently is bananas.
Yeah, that's right.
And so knowing how big she can be,
really
she's a super conservative. So if she, knowing how big she can be, she's so underplaying this whole thing and he's like literally smashing his head against the counter.
Yeah, like her voice is
it's like a doll.
It's pretty twee to begin with, but like then she like subdues it so much more into a whisper almost.
Yeah.
And Weird Al's yelling at her the entire movie being like, I love you, and she's like, okay, Weird Al. Like it's such a weird dichotomy between the two.
They were considering getting Jennifer Tilly, I believe, and
that's another
Ellen
whisperer.
DeGeneres.
Not a whisperer.
Well, and then Bob, the best friend, was supposed to be Jerry Seinfeld.
Right.
Oh, really?
But he was like, no.
No. And it's weird that then Michael Richards is in the movie and you wonder if they cross paths and Jerry.
Right. Was like, hey, you should have this guy because Jerry loves Michael Richards' stand up so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, maybe not all of it, but some of it.
Well, I read that Michael Richards was originally not going to do it because he was suffering from an attack of Bell's palsy. And so he didn't feel like he could like give the performance.
Really?
That's what IMDb trivia said.
Oh. Weird. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about him later because, you know, he's sort of like, I think, as you said, he takes over the movie.
Yeah. He's the elephant in the room of this podcast.
Well, right, yeah, that too.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But so he goes to like some party or something that's thrown by his aunt or whatever. And his uncle wins this TV station in a poker game. And he's just going to get rid of it because they can't even find a manager for it. But his aunt convinces him to give George a shot at it, to make him the manager of this station, U62, and he doesn't really have any other opportunities, so he takes it. Him and Bob are going to run this station.
Mm-hmm. It's something kind of stupid that they don't expect anything from, and then they start to love it. This is like basketball. This is a lot of comedies. This is mainly a comedy.
They go to... I think it's an amazing scene because they go check out the station in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's in the middle of the night. And then as they're about to go inside, a hobo appears and says, do you have change?
Yeah.
George Al picks some change out of his pocket and hands it out. And the hobo counts out $85.95, a dollar, hands him a dollar bill and says, thanks, mister. He just makes change.
I love that part.
It's so
There's
great.
So many little jokes like that.
And it's very like, it's very Ziskin. It's very like Loaded Gun. Like all those movies, I just love it. I love that type of humor. And I think Weird Al does that, but also has the weirdness that those movies, they just keep on going over the top. And he has some like weirdnesses in there that aren't quite that make it different.
And not only that, but you got to know, they did not audition this hobo. Weird Al knew this guy somehow. Went, you're in the movie.
Yeah.
I also read that Ginger Baker from Cream wanted that part.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's pretty cool, too. But the hobo, I mean, he gives such like a really great performance. And he, he's so funny. Like, comes back later and, spoiler alert, saves the fucking day.
But that's a line.
Hobo.
That's one of those lines. The hobo is one of those things my friends and I have always said, thanks, mister. Like, we've been saying that our whole lives. We've been doing that forever. So hey, do you have any change? Thanks, mister. Like, that guy's amazing. He's done nothing else.
Yeah.
He's only been in that.
Yeah.
If he's still alive.
Yeah.
He was probably like a nuclear scientist as well.
Oh, probably.
Like Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
I love the scene too, because it just shows Weird Al's character is so relentlessly positive.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that he kind of, anything that happens to him is like, okay, this is horrible, but we'll get by that, you know? And there's a part where he goes up to the door and it's open. He's like, look at that. Such a friendly neighborhood. The door's open. It's like in the middle of nowhere. It's
and
so
I,
creepy.
And I always think in this movie, you have choices when you're making a movie.
Yeah.
And the door.
Yeah.
The knob's in the middle of the door. Where do you find that door? You made a choice to have this odd door.
That's a weird door, man.
It's a weird door. Just in the scene with his roommate.
And it's on both sides.
Yes.
They show the exterior. That knob is on the middle.
In the scene with the roommates, they're just casually having a snack, and it's the weirdest snack. It's a Twinkie split with a raw hot dog, spray cheese, and he dunks it in milk. And
have you guys ever had that?
No.
Okay.
And I was like, do people actually eat that?
The answer is no. Nobody does.
But somebody's gotta.
He did.
I think we need to. I think that's like supplemental
Alex,
material.
You run out and grab a box of Twinkies. Do they come in boxes?
Yeah. Oh. And a package and a half of wieners because they come in 12.
Right. We're going to need to try this a lot. You know what? Take it around to the rest of the people here at the office.
They don't think that they're going to be able to do a great job. They don't have any experience. And Weird Al is like, he says that it's just like going to work every day as a fishmonger, except you don't have to clean and gut fish all day.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. And they meet Philo, the head engineer.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Anthony Geary, who was Luke on General Hospital?
I guess so.
Of the famous Luke and Laura storyline?
I guess so.
It's he doesn't look anything like he did on the soap opera.
Yeah.
No, and he's the calmest person. Like, I feel like the director was just like, take these quaaludes.
Yeah.
He's like boring Brad Dourif's performance from something. It's weird, man.
Yes, hello, my name is Philo.
Like, he's so odd.
Yeah.
He's so weird. Where he's screaming and Victoria Jackson's underplaying it, he's in a coma.
Yeah.
The whole movie.
And Fran Drescher's kind of doing like in her mid-range.
Yeah, well, she's not the nanny yet, right?
No. And,
like, she's not full nanny.
But she's been in Spinal Tap at this point.
But she's been in Spinal Tap, yeah. She is playing her mid-range. She's not, like, totally nasal yet.
And she's like the secretary who she wants to become like a news anchor, but there's so many new managers that they've never given her the shot or whatever.
Yeah. There is some, like, another layer to the story, which is, as we'll talk about it, you'll notice, like, what's his name, the main character? George?
Yeah. George Newman.
All the way along, George.
It's like two Seinfeld characters.
Yeah, it's two Seinfeld characters. And all the way along, he does nice things for people.
He does something nice for every single person in the movie.
And they help him in the end. Every single person
even
helps
if
him
it backfires, like he tries to return the mail to Fletcher.
Right.
He's doing something nice. He just wants to be friendly. He's super positive.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good segue, because that's what he does. He gets a piece of mail for R.J. Fletcher, who's the nemesis, Channel 8. He runs the other corporation. He's like one of those big corporate cigar
chomping
bad guys.
He's so good at playing a slime ball, this guy.
Yeah.
He's so great. He like licks his teeth the entire time.
The son, who's like, but dad, that guy.
Oh, he's so arch.
He was Jambi on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh.
The same guy was Jambi.
Okay.
That guy is such an Eric Trump Jr. or whatever.
He is so good in that movie. He has a joke later where Fletcher's mad, and he says, what would R.J. Fletcher Sr. say if he was alive today? And the son turns to his buddy and goes, help, let me out of this box. It's dark. I can't breathe. Help, and he thinks it's hilarious, but it's such a good...
And it's,
right, buddy?
But like, it's kind of at a character. Like, it's just that joke was too good for Weird Al not to pass up in this movie, so he just stuck it in that character's mouth.
To this guy.
Right.
He doesn't really fit his character because he's so terrified.
Yeah, we don't want to like him that much.
Yeah, but that's very funny. Yeah.
Yeah, but we see him, they bring in Michael Richards' character, Stanley Spadowski. He's like this janitor, this simple-minded janitor, and they like accuse him of throwing out this really important report, and they like dress him down, and then they like throw him out, out, and they take away his precious mop, and then, of course, he sits down in his chair, and the report's
right there.
He got for his
birthday, 6th birthday.
Yeah, he got the mop for his 6th goddamn birthday. Yeah.
That's the best part, is like, he's screaming, that's my mop, that's my mop, and they're like, not anymore. And then, of course, when he meets George, the most importance is put on this dumb thing, the mop.
Yeah. I got that mop when I was 6.
It's so... It could have been anything.
Yeah. But the mop, like, it keeps on, like, coming through, like, as well. But so he comes back, and he hires him to be the janitor at Channel 62. And
I had to look at my shirt.
That's the research we do for this show.
That's right.
Shirts. Yeah.
But it's not so easy running a TV station. They have a bunch of problems, because George has to go and be the on-air talent. He does the George's Clubhouse.
Uncle Nutsy's Funhouse.
Right. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the creepiest name I can ever think of for a chicken.
Well,
show.
Not more creepy than Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
We don't want that.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
But so,
it's a cold prickly right there.
But so none of the kids like him. Like, the ratings are crap, and eventually, like, all the shows, like, we did. There are some, like, good commercial parodies and stuff in there. We do see, I think, at this point, we see Emo Phillips as the shop teacher.
Yeah,
that part's great.
You know, Al was just like, we got to get Emo Phillips in this.
Yeah,
and just have Emo be Emo Phillips. He doesn't need to play another character.
Yeah, for sure. And then, because I didn't remember this scene, and then I remember seeing Mad TV with the sketches where the guy would keep on hurting himself, cutting off limbs and stuff like that while trying to do a project. That's just ripped from this.
That was ripped from Julia Child on SNL.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great bit. All of that cuts his thumb off, squirts blood everywhere. All of that for the button on that scene, which is him saying, "Boy, is my face red.
Boy, is my face red." Yeah.
It's so good.
Another thing that I really enjoyed that I noticed having to do with Stanley is like, there's a part where George is like doing the Close Encounters thing where he's making the mashed potatoes into like the Enchanted Mesa thing.
Yeah.
And then when he discovers Stanley, he's wearing an Enchanted Mesa t-shirt.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, everything really in this movie is on purpose.
Yeah.
Everything is on
purpose. Oh, and going back to the, because we saw it on the big screen. We're sitting like 3 rows in. So it was just,
we could see all the detail.
It was a lot of detail, which we'd never seen before. And in the Emo Phillips scene, somehow they had to tape Emo Phillips' thumb down. And you can see all the clear tape that they have. It's like a ball of tape they stuck to his hand.
And he's squirting a thing. He's 100% squirting a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because I was like, just fold your thumb in. But I think it was one of those things that Emo Phillips was like, I can't do this. And they're like, just tape it down.
Just Emo Phillips playing.
Yeah.
But so the station is not exactly successful. Like, it's not going to survive throughout the week. They don't have enough revenues. It's all going to be shut down. So George is fucked. And he's like really despondent about it. This is also at the same point where he loses his girlfriend.
Yeah, he had made dinner plans, and then he worked late, had a daydream about the Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, yes.
So, which is the partially the music video, which is him parodying Beverly Hillbillies, but to the tune of Money for Nothing by Dire Straits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this a song that you guys like really liked out of Weird Al's oeuvre?
I did, because I knew Beverly Hillbillies, I liked it. And Mark Knopfler is actually playing the guitar on this from Dire Straits.
And it's such like an iconic song of that era
and
as well,
the video too.
The video. Yeah.
The video was like the first CG video. It was all black people, but it was still.
Yeah, do you remember that?
No, I don't. See, I didn't watch many music videos, so I didn't know this song.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a Weird Al original.
Oh,
kind
no,
of thing.
That is full on Dire Straits. It parodies the video, all of it, the color, the black and white.
Oh, for sure.
Everything about it.
Yeah, yeah. I know that now, having seen the videos. But back then, I was like, what is this song? Like, it's not one of Weird Al's famous songs, so why'd they stick it in the movie? It just kind of fell out of place to me at the time when I saw it.
Yeah.
Now I understand how important it was to everyone.
I don't know. I guess like the Beverly Hillbillies were probably more in the zeitgeist at the time. Like, they were going to make that movie. I don't know when that came out, but I'm sure it was not long after that.
And you're going to a Weird Al movie. You're hoping for a Weird Al song.
Yeah.
So here it is. A Weird Al parody in the middle of
the movie. It's kind of weird to me that there's not more.
I mean, his band do all the UHF theme is the song UHF is over the credits, and they do all the music in the movie. But this is the only parody in the movie.
Yeah, there's lots of like movie parodies, but it's not like, it would be a different sort of beast if it was like an anthology of music videos sort of like tied together with like weird bits.
Sure, yeah, but it would also be, I feel like what people went to see in this movie, because it didn't do that well,
No.
right?
No. But Weird Al had way better as a rental.
Right. Yeah. But Weird Al had a lot of fans. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to me that it didn't do well. And I think that might have been because, like, he didn't do what the fans loved him for a lot during this movie. He just did it once. So yeah. I don't know. That might have been part of it.
Not true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to take that note to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about the rest of UHF.
It's UHF.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We're back talking about UHF. We've got Nug Nargang here.
From the Illusionoid, bud.
Yes, from Illusionoid.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we're at the part where they're despondent. The station's going under. Al's ready to give up. He's ready to go for a drink. And he doesn't even drink.
Mm-hmm. Just but like, he's going to start.
Yeah.
I hear good things.
Good Al.
Yeah.
But so he puts Stanley Spadowski on the air.
Just like, here, like, you want a TV show? You're on.
Go ahead. You know. Yeah.
My favorite part about that is that Stanley's like, but I can still be the janitor.
Yeah, <it's> awesome.
Yeah.
And they go to a bar and he orders a blueberry daiquiri.
That is one of those things in the movie that I love so much. Two guys hanging their heads at the bar. You've seen it in every scene. Guys, what can I get you? And he goes, I'll have a beer. And Al doesn't look up and just goes, blueberry daiquiri, in the exact same tone.
Yeah.
And of course, very casually in that scene, the bartender delivers both of those very specific drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also love when they walk in, bartender on the phone going, yeah. I know, I saw it too. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
It's exactly like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
He's like, listen to this. And he puts the phone.
It's such a, you're like, oh, I wonder what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long did it take him to walk to the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But everybody at the bar is watching and is like fully engaged by the television. Mm. And it's Stanley Spadowski. It's his clubhouse now and everybody loves it. All the kids are going crazy and he's like, he's making people laugh and he's also inspiring. He's like telling about his mop and what it means to him. And it's beautiful.
It was yeah. like the Forrest Gump before there was Forrest Gump.
Right. Yeah. He said, yeah. Life is like a mop.
Yeah.
It really the crud out of it and you gotta rinse it off.
Robert Zemeckis stole that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny to the obviously it's the rally cry mm-hmm. that George needs to hear, but also that the people love so much. And yeah. then you're like, why is this what these people need?
Yeah, yeah. exactly. Well, it's all these bikers and all these people yeah. and you're like, they like it too.
Misfits and outcasts, man. Yeah. Speaking right to them.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
Yeah, well, so this sort of turns their fortunes around, and all of a sudden, it's a big hit. Their production values go up. All of a sudden, like, they're wearing suits. And they still have to find, like, some other shows that sort of program on the air, which, like, are maybe not as successful. Like, they have Raul's Wild Kingdom, right. which is just a dude named Raul showing his crazy menagerie of pets.
And they're shocked by this, like, all the stuff that he does, which is great. The suction cup turtle. And
throwing yeah. dogs at the window to see if they can fly.
Yeah.
That actor was
yeah.
killed by a drunk driver during the shooting of the movie.
Yeah,
what?
And so his part was actually supposed to be bigger. Like, the dogs he threw at the window were going to come back at him later in the movie to tie that all off.
Oh.
But they had to shoot scenes without him with a body double in it.
Damn.
And they dedicated the movie to him.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's wow, just wow. such a weird... Like,
it that's a been, weird dedication.
Would have been like, so much more. Would have been so much more of that character.
Yeah, yeah. And that character is like one of the beloved characters of this
yeah.
movie.
Yeah,
like,
he also has the badgers.
Yeah.
Badgers.
Yeah.
We don't need no stinking badgers.
Yeah, yeah. It's I and he's Rip. Like an odd looking dude, and he like yeah, everyone.
There's
is.
Nobody in this movie that isn't an odd looking dude.
I mean, they look regular. Like, they look like people.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's people that don't fit your traditional Hollywood actor, right? And so
yeah.
there's like a little person in this movie that is the cameraman.
Billy Barty. Yeah, it's Billy Barty from yeah. Masters of the Universe, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've done on the podcast, and he's so great in it, and. The only joke about his size is that he just has to shoot up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
that's
right. And it's
the
not,
only joke.
It's not anti or making fun of him.
No.
They just bring him in. He's a short cameraman and his name's Noodles.
Yeah. And the bad guys make fun of him.
All the time.
And that's great because we're not supposed to. And it's so great.
And the bad guys also say Broad shouldn't be in broadcasting.
Yeah. Like to Fran Drescher.
To Fran Drescher. And she's, and then calls about it. And
she's
course,
like, it's in the title. And it's in the name.
And the bad guy she calls is like, I always tell them they should never call chicks broads. Like all the bad guys are for sure bad guys in this.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. Yeah. They also look like every character from Anchorman.
Yes.
So great.
They really do.
Yeah.
There's another show, Wheel of Fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly you, what
when
it
you're,
like.
When you're waiting fish.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love when the woman, they do the, like, the, you can get the red snapper or you can get what's in the mystery box.
And the crowd, the box, the fish, the box. And then,
I'll take the box.
And in the box is nothing. You're so stupid.
You're yeah, so
because
stupid.
It's the karate guy back. Yeah.
And, and they're just like, I think Al did for the movie, Hire His Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, George Newman gives all of his friends television shows.
Yeah, which is kind of great. So what happens is the other station, RJ, whatever his name is.
RJ Fletcher of Channel 8.
That's right. Like somebody who makes arrows. I don't know what significance that has.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he starts to take notice of Channel 62 because they start becoming really popular and they start biting into the ratings and they start losing advertisers. And so he decides that he needs to take really extreme measures to put these guys down. Mm-hmm. So he goes to his uncle Harvey, who had the station, who owns the station, and he's lost a whole bunch of money, and he demands that Harvey sell him the station.
And it just so happens that Harvey got a call from his bookie, and he has to have $75,000 in cash by Friday.
Yeah. His bookie, played by like Dr. Claw.
Yeah, it's legit a Dr. Claw shot from, and he unscrews Gadget, his cigar hand and screws in a cleaver and chops a summer sausage.
It's kind of ableist, though. Like, not all amputees use their hands for like evil. Right, I mean, I guess cutting a summer sausage isn't evil, but it seems menacing in the moment.
But that's emphasizing. He's emphasizing it for us watching it, but he's cutting a salami over the phone.
Right.
It seems very strange. The guy on the phone would be like, "Ooh, that sounds like a salami guy.
I always keep a salami next to my phone.
Just to make a point."
Sounds spicy, guys. He means it this time.
Yeah. He's going to fly over to where the station is and they'll sign the deal. But at the last minute, George manages to get his aunt to get him to agree to at least hold off. And if he can match the money, the offer, then he'll sell him the station instead. And it seems impossible. Like, it's, you know, it's a Hail Mary sort of plan. Like, it's probably not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But he gives them the chance. And so now they've just got to make up the $75,000. And there's only one way to do it in the 1980s. And that's to put on a telethon. Yeah.
Which is an idea he gets from Stanley saying, I sure wish I owned a television station.
Right. Yeah.
And then the idea is actually ingenious because we want to sell 7,500 shares of the company to the people.
Yeah.
And you'll get for $10. You'll get a share of the station. And
I like that.
And it will belong to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sounds a little bit communist. But I'd like to own it. I'd buy a share.
Yeah, in UHF?
For sure.
For Wheel of Fish alone.
Yeah. A Strip Solitaire, one of the other shows. Conan the Librarian.
I bet, like, if you had bought shares in this movie, it's finally paying off dividends right now. You're getting your first, like, $10 check.
It's getting that rewatchability bump right now. Everybody's going to go watch it.
Woo! But so they do the telethon, but in order to, like, throw them off again, RJ Fletcher, he gets his lackeys to kidnap Stanley Spadowski, who's, like, the only reason why people really want to watch this station. He's the person that they really enjoy, that gives everybody hope. And so without Stanley on stage, they're like losing money. And there's like a bunch of like the sort of like bad telethon sort of acts, like torsos wearing top hats and
upside down yodeling midgets. Their stomachs, they were called
the hat.
It was called the Whistling Midgets. The brothers, the guys with the long noses, are an actual act. These are all acts that Weird Al knows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the guy on stilts dressed as Uncle Sam and the upside down ukulele guy. These are all acts.
I love the upside down ukulele guy because his face was so red.
Oh, of course it was. How many takes of that do you think he had to do?
His eyes were like bloodshot and crying.
Brutal.
No more. No more. I can't yodel through
the
tears.
80. No.
One more time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so Stanley sort of like escapes. At one point, he's like itching. And so they like open the door to like shut him up. And he sees his old mop, like the original mop, the mop that he was given on his sixth birthday mm-hmm. behind them because they're keeping him at the TV station, and he breaks out of his ropes.
Oh, yeah. This
gives him Hulk strength.
Yeah, he gives him Hulk strength. And before that, when he's tied up and he's playing this kind of guessing game of like, guess what color I see? He has an orange bandana on, and he's like, I see the color orange. What is it? What is it? And then he says, an orange. Which is a stupid, stupid joke because, of course, he should see the band. It's just like one step removed to make it even more stupid.
Yeah.
And I like that commitment to making jokes stupid.
There's a lot of dumb jokes in this movie that are like the obvious dumb thing they didn't go with. They went with a dumber dumb thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, George comes to rescue him or try to rescue him, and he has like a great like Rambo parody.
Oh, and this is all because Philo put a camera in Channel 8.
Right, that's right.
He went, crawled into the air ducts and put some cameras in RJ's office and in the lobby.
I love the camera that he puts in because any show you've seen since the 90s, it's been like this little strand of a fiber optic camera.
No way. This thing is it's a camera. It's a television camera.
Yeah.
It looks
a studio
like
camera.
This thing can't support that. Angled into and jammed. It's obviously too heavy for the tiles it's sitting on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to take a whole tile out.
Yeah. And just replace it with a camera. No one will notice.
Nope.
So they get back and they're short of the money. And his uncle has got to sell. You know, there's nothing he can do because, you know, these guys, you don't want to mess with them. And it seems like all hope is lost. It's the last minute. And the guy, the hobo from before, the one who asked for change, he comes back. And in a scene previously, he'd asked R.J. Fletcher for change. And he'd give him one lousy penny.
A penny and went, don't spend it all in one place.
Yeah, we're Canadians. We don't even use pennies anymore.
I know.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the only way this movie's dated.
the only way.
Yeah.
Because UHF means things to people now.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we should have explained that to our audience before.
And even Al didn't want to call UHF because he knew cable was coming in and taking place of all the VHF UHF stations.
Right.
I think his title was The Vidiot.
Vidiot, yeah.
That's better.
No.
But then they went, UHF. So in other places in the world, it's called The Vidiot of UHF, and other places call it TV Crazies.
TV Crazies is the best one.
It is pretty great.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he has sold this expensive, rare, valuable coin for enough money to buy the remaining shares.
The hobo, yeah.
Yeah. And a Rolex to taunt R.J. Fletcher, who didn't get a Rolex from his shitty son.
All he's ever wanted in his whole life was a Rolex, and his son gave him a not Rolex watch, and he yelled at his own son.
And that's such a Trump moment for me. Like, that's when I was like, that's Trump's son. Like, he's like, here, Dad, have a watch. And he's like, it's not a Rolex. And
he get out of here. Away.
Yeah, it's not a rhino tail, you know.
I'm going to throw you under the bus to the Russians.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's like, oh, am I ever glad I ran into you. Right. Thanks for the penny.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
all of that. And it's like,
it's nice.
It's this throwaway hobo who has one of my favorite bits. It's just that camera pan establishing they're at City Hall.
Yeah.
And that hobo's on a bench with a blind guy, and the blind guy moves a Rubik's Cube one move and then goes, is this it? Nope.
Yeah.
One more move. Is this it? No. And they do that as the camera pans. It's just this joke that's in there.
Oh, yeah. So many throwaway jokes. Like,
I think what I like about this and what maybe saves it from being maybe exploitative is that, like, there's a real kindness to it. Mm. Like, he loves that hobo. Same as he loves, like, the little guy, Billy Barty. And all these people, you know, the misfits and weirdos, like the people who didn't fit in, like, in the 80s.
Yeah.
There's, like, a place
like
for them here.
Like a news anchor. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, exactly. Well,
no,
now,
kind of. Like.
Well, exactly. But now, like, we recognize that, like, these people aren't misfits or weirdos. They're just people, and they deserve all the opportunities and possibilities and happiness that all of us do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this was, like, one of the sort of things that was sort of said that before it was cool to say that.
Right.
In the 80s, it was, like, cool to make fun of people and elevate yourself by putting other people down.
Mm-hmm. And everybody in that movie who belittles someone or puts them down or does something bad, every single one of them gets their comeuppance.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Each one.
Yeah.
There's like two or three that all get it.
Yeah,
and that's all that's exactly what it should be.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a very karmic movie.
Yeah.
Everyone that does good gets good. Everyone that does bad gets bad.
And that's about it for, like, the movie. Him and Terry reconcile. They have, like, a Gone with the Wind sort of ending. And then it's the credits and the UHF song. which I don't think describes the plot of the movie.
No, it's right. just a celebration of the channel.
Yeah. It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. There's so many movies end or so many songs that end movies, which just describe the plot. And they're like, we just saw that.
Yeah. We know.
Yeah. We're cool.
It's a convention.
Is this like a conclusion? Is this in summation? What's happening?
I guess they're running away together.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a few things that we didn't talk about.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
The elephant in the room, Michael Richards. I mean, I don't know what there is to say about that other than it's like hard to sort of watch it and think about that because he's such like a lovely sort of character. He plays like, you know, he's almost like a Lenny from A Mice and
Men. Well, and he has the scene with George. You're my best friend, George. Like, right. Exactly. It's very Mice and Men. But he's so beloved in this movie. Like, even if you don't love him and you think, oh, he's just a goof, everyone else loves him.
Yeah.
And then to deal with the Michael Richards of now as that character is a very weird thing when you watch it again.
Well, yeah, and he's so funny in this movie.
He's so good and lovable.
He's one of the funniest parts of this movie routinely. Yeah. And yeah,
he sort of steals the show from Weird Al. I mean,
totally.
This is, you know,
I mean, literally in the movie and the movie itself.
A Weird Al vehicle. Yeah, and that's right. Yeah. Even in the plot of it, he becomes like, you know,
he steals
the show. Which is kind of great because, you know, just giving yourself a movie is kind of like a douchey thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the self-disparaging sort of nature makes it sort of work.
For sure.
But watching it now, I guess also like a lot of time has passed. I feel like he is.
It's hard because it brings up the subject of do we forgive celebrities for their sins? And like, you know, Michael Richards and Mel Gibson, like they've both really made a lot of attempts to make up
and tried to address it
and tried to address it and talk to like community leaders of those communities. And like they've really, really been trying to do away with that tarnished image. But I think society as a whole finds it very, very hard to let go of things. I mean, we rewatch old movies.
Yeah.
We don't let go of anything.
No.
So I feel like it's hard for us to let go of the biggest things in people's careers, which are usually their meltdowns.
Yeah.
You know, and Britney Spears, the thing I remember about her is like getting out of like the hair loss and stuff instead of her music when I was a kid, you know, like, and I
remember the videos pretty well because they were artfully directed.
Right. No other reason. Yeah. But it's hard to look past that, especially when it deals with something that's as atrocious as
racism.
Yeah. So it's difficult.
Yeah.
But then people can look past racism and sexism to vote someone to presidency. So I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
It was a different, you know, you watch this movie and it's locked to a pretty specific time.
Yeah.
A lot of the references, like even when Weird Al does parody songs, he picks songs that are like, I was explaining this to somebody today, in the 80s, he did a parody of Ruthless People by Mick Jagger for the movie Ruthless People. Now, the movie and the song did not do well, but he didn't know that when he did the parody and then put the album out a year later.
Right.
So you have to take a gamble.
Yeah.
So in this movie, there's a parody of Yahoo Sirius's Young Einstein for one scene, and it just falls flat.
Wow.
Anthony Geary as Philo hands him these two wires and says, I want to see if this will handle 60,000 volts. What?
Right.
And he flips the switch, and it's these two, and lightning and his hair stands out. And that's exactly the poster of Young Einstein starring Yahoo Sirius.
I remember that.
And that was in there just for that joke, for that reference.
Yeah.
And it was locked because that was 1988.
You know,
and this is 89.
I've never ever thought about the fact that, like, when you're making a movie, you're trying to, and because it takes a long time to make a movie, you're trying to make it relevant to the time you're putting it out. And if it's a parody movie, you're going to have to take some gambles on which parodies will actually play.
Yeah. Well, and his movie,
I never thought about
his movie choices for parodies, like Gandhi and Rambo and Gone with the Wind and,
like 70s
and Conan,
30s,
the Barbarian were all out way before this, so they were all well established things to parody.
Yeah. One thing that I'm not sure flies, like, he plays Gandhi, right?
No, the director of the movie plays Gandhi.
Okay, that's bad too.
That's very bad. What
he
do we say?
Plays he plays a parody of Gandhi, though. So
yeah.
It's so hard in parody to.
I mean, you could hire an Indian guy.
Yes,
we always say sequels are worse.
Right.
They're never as good as the first. And so, of course, they made it the worst possible thing.
Exactly. If they had hired Fisher Stevens, I would have, like, that would have made sense to me.
A lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and some of the other, like, I mean, I think in the 80s, like, some of his, there were some racial stereotypes in there, which I think are maybe a little bit, like, iffy.
Yeah. But,
and in some of his older songs and stuff like that.
But, yeah, for sure.
You know, I think he's like, he has like a kindness.
Yeah. And stuff. And especially as we said about this movie, about having misfits and ne'er-do-wells and stuff.
Yeah.
Like when usually a movie in the '80s did that and they were made fun of, the ne'er-do-wells and misfits looked like Christian Slater. Like in this movie, they look different. They look like average people.
Yeah.
Everybody does. And there's little, like, everybody who has a major on air, major on camera role, like the cameraman never speaks.
Yeah.
The cameraman for U62 never speaks.
Right.
And he's this big black dude who's always eating.
Yeah.
And in every scene, if you see him on camera, he's running the camera for George's talk show with the, Emo Phillips, chewing on a sandwich. Later on when he gets his own show, there's just Practical Jokes, he's chewing on a sandwich and tripping people coming out of the building. He's always eating a sandwich.
Yeah.
And that's his only part. And it's just so funny.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Like everybody looks odd.
The casting in this is really good. Like it's cast like as well as like a Coen Brothers movie for like getting like people who look like real people.
Yeah, yeah. It's like The Wire of parodies because they just like get real people to act. That's what they do.
Yeah. Was there anything else we didn't talk about in this fine film?
The fantastic commercials.
Yeah.
Commercials, not just Spatula City.
Spatula City
is the greatest, which has that great, I think goes over the head of a lot of people now if you're going to watch it, because back in the day it was Cy Sperling for the Hair Club for Men that liked it so much he bought the company.
Right.
So here's this bald guy staring dead into the camera and you can see him clearly reading his lines.
Oh, the lines are written across like 2 kilometers in front of him because
I'm Cy Greenwood, president of Spatula City. He's, and he's terrible.
Yeah.
He's terrible. And just the actors in the commercial are all overacting. The dad and the mom and the kids are all super excited. Like they're jumping up and down in the car to go to Spatula City.
Spatula City.
Yeah. And then the funeral home one is great. Just the opening line of, are you tired of shoddy cut rate funerals? And there's a guy buried on an angle with his feet out of the ground.
Oh, yeah. And an arm sticking out.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, what are we going to do about these horrible funerals?
Remember in the first season of 6 Feet Under, they did all those commercial parodies for funeral homes?
Oh, yeah.
It was really funny.
Yeah.
I love, they should bring more of those in the movie. We also talked about Starship Troopers, who did commercial parodies in the movie.
Starship Troopers had a lot of commercial parodies.
Yeah. That was last week. Yeah. So it's interesting that this is a theme now.
Yeah. And there was also lots of like the movie parodies. Like we didn't talk much about Conan the Librarian.
So funny.
That's another one of those lines that stuck with us was,
don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
For sure.
It's not helpful as a librarian.
And like that's one, like me and my friends like used to reference all the time. Like it was just, it's so great because, you know, a lot of, even in the improv, because you do a lot of improv.
I do a lot of improv, yeah.
And in improv games, I remember from high school improv, it was a lot about putting, to show off a characteristic, you put that character in the most opposite situation that they could ever be in. And that was Conan the Librarian. Like, it fit with the barbarian thing, but it also just put this guy who was too big for a library, too loud for a library.
And too mean to be a librarian. My book's late. He slices a man in half.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the effects in this movie are all over the place.
Well, like, and they're everything. Some of them are really good. Some of them are great, very practical.
Yeah.
And then the other one's claymation when Philo reveals that he's an alien and has to go back to his home planet.
My work here is done.
And, and he just, it's that Large Marge moment from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Right. Yeah.
So his face just goes, blah, and then he disappears in a beam of light and flies back to his home planet.
Yeah. And it doesn't look great.
No, it looks silly, but it works for the movie.
And there's other stuff like in the Rambo stuff, his bodysuit looks kind of like okay for like just a foam suit.
It looks weird, but kind of good.
Yeah. But then, R.J. Fletcher in the other helicopter literally has a Sharpie on tape, like on his helmet, a Sharpie 6, like News Channel 6 or whatever. And I was like,
you couldn't paint that 8 or whatever.
Yeah. You couldn't just paint that on the helmet.
So funny.
It was just kind of stupid.
I think the budget for this was only $5 million. Like that was
gonna just $5.
$5.
Like, they made it on a weekend with their buddies.
That's right. But that's like not a lot of money, right?
$5 million? I don't know.
In 1989.
Maybe?
I guess it was a little bit of money. But apparently, like, they had the idea for this, and they shopped it around, and they couldn't find anybody to sort of finance it except for Orion, and only if they could get it in under that sort of money. And I guess they had to do, like, the CGI for the video. I don't know how much that would have cost in 1989.
Oh, yeah.
They certainly didn't have time to do reshoots. I mean, in the Uncle Nutsy's clubhouse in the first one, where he's like, hey, what's your name? Al, the kid goes, Tommy. He's like, and are you having a good time? And the kid spits, hits Al, and hangs off his nose, and you see the kid crack up and cover his face.
See, I think they had that as a little bit of like, We didn't get the spit take on the other takes, but this one, the kid corpses. So we'll go with the one where the kid corpses because the spit looks fantastic.
100%.
Like, it's so...
It's great. And you gross. Know the kid, like, love it's so spit. Gross and it's hilarious. And the kid just covers his face.
Yeah.
Later on, Victoria Jackson checks her answering machine and George is leaving her a message. That's yeah. just him screaming, come back to me. I'm in hell. I miss you. I love yeah. you. And Al was doing it just off camera. And so Victoria Jackson is cracking up
yeah.
in that moment.
Well, that kind of feels real, though.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like, if
it's you
funny.
Like the she inner...
Was, yeah. It's like this kind of like actual in drama in the... In,
like, how can I stay weird... mad at you? You screaming at me on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love you!
Oh, God, Terry!
Yeah. yeah.
So are,
I'm
you
betting
guys,
in hell!
Do you guys have any, like, criticisms of this movie? Like, how did it feel, like, sort of rewatching it now? Did you think that it all held up? Or were there parts that, like, were slower or dragged or weren't funny?
I think this is like a movie that is effective in what it's trying to do and could get away with a lot because it's a parody.
Yeah.
And because it's Weird Al too, because we don't expect to be Weird Al to be in a movie and we don't expect that movie to be good. So it like already has a lot of headwinds or a lot of tailwinds going for it, as it approaches release. But then I don't think it's a well-made movie. Like, I don't think the production value is very high. I don't think like the jokes are really funny. But I don't think, like, a lot of them are necessarily well-written. Like, I don't think this is a well-made movie. And the direction is a little off sometimes in very TV. So...
Well, the director did most of his music videos, so yeah. right. it is TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's all based on TV. So to have yeah. a TV right. director for it isn't a bad choice,
oh,
but it's
oh, man,
movie.
No, you just changed shows, my mind on that.
It just shows that it is a TV director directing the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You
and
can
I
see it.
And I think a lot of 90s movies, especially aimed at kids, felt that way. They were just like, hey, place the camera here. We won't really think about why. And we'll just do that.
What are we going to do? Three takes? We're done.
Yeah, exactly. And so this movie definitely suffered from that. But I mean, it being about TV and looking like TV, now you got me. Like, that's, what about you, Nug? Did you have
I mean, this movie, I will always think it's hilarious. There are a lot of jokes that are dated, mm-hmm. which is what happens when you go back and look at a movie. And even when yeah. you go back and look at stuff like Airplane, there are a lot of dated references to things mm-hmm. from that period.
Right.
I do... have such endearing memories about this movie with my friends. I recently got engaged and this was one of the first movies I sat down and made my fiance watch with me.
did you like it?
She stone-faced the entire movie. This is terrible. And oh then God. the one where she broke. When yeah. she broke was when they were trying to get Stanley. They were rescuing, or Stanley tried to break out and they catch him in the lobby.
Right.
And they catch George and Stanley in the lobby and then they hear a noise. Mm-hmm. And then they go over to the closet marked supplies and they open it up and all of the what is
Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
all of the Kung Fu guys yeah. jump out of the closet and yell supplies.
Right.
And that's yeah. where she goes, ah! Oh, God. And like, it is mad that she laughed at it. But I was like, oh, good. You're a keeper. You get this. It's a dumb.
Right. That was a test.
It's so dumb. That joke is so dumb.
I also just want to say a PSA just for people that are dating people that are showing them their favorite movies. It's fine if they don't like
it's 100%.
Totally,
I what? Never expected her to like it.
Yeah.
And then when she said, is this in your head all the time?
Oh
and I go,
God.
Yeah. And yeah. she goes, I get you now. Like she totally, every wow. dumb joke I make, every dad joke I make, every horrible reference I make is all because yeah. I watched this and it imprinted on my brain as a kid.
Oh, that's man. Beautiful.
In a way. I made my fiance, the first movie I made her watch was
Eraserhead.
But it was kind of like one of the more boring of the Coen brothers. It was Sucker Proxy.
I love that movie.
But I think it might be their best.
It is.
Like, so good.
100%. The best part of that is where the janitor jams his mop into the ears of the thing and says, technically, I'm not supposed to do this. It's so good.
You know,
oh, yeah.
for kids. Like, I love that movie so much. But
Paul Newman's such a good R.J. Fletcher.
Oh, yes. And the janitor's such a big, important guy. They're exactly the same
movie. Oh, they're exactly the same movie. but, yeah, but it was like that. We watched it. And then she was like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, that's my feeling about
love.
She gave
you the ring back.
Like, I get it as a film watcher, but it's not my cup of tea.
It's fine. You know, yeah. everybody, you'll put you like something and maybe you put that out on the internet and then you get 1,000 people telling you you're wrong for this reason. But we're all allowed to like or hate our own things.
Yeah.
We're all allowed to have our
heard?
Own opinions. We're all allowed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you find a movie that you really come together on. Do you have one of those with your...
Kind of. What did we see that we really liked? Oh, probably the Lego movie. We just, Batman. Lego Batman, actually. Loved that movie so much.
Yeah.
There's so many throwaway jokes in that one, too, Dick says, "Now, my name's Richard Grayson, but the kids call me Dick. Kids can be cruel." Like, it's just so many throwaway jokes. And, like, her nephew's with us, and he's 8. And he goes, what are they laughing about? We're like, we'll tell you when you're 20.
Yeah, that's awesome.
If you don't get it by then.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. And what about you, Rob? Did you, upon rewatching this, did you find anything that didn't really fit with it? Or?
I mean, there were parts that were kind of slow, but when we were watching it in the theater, you, I, and JM went and saw it, and it was...
realizing why we started being friends, you know?
Yeah, it was nice, you know? I was laughing, I was having a good time, and it was a nice experience. I sort of re-watched it so I could get it back in my head this morning, and some parts seemed like a little bit slow, so maybe give it more than a week or so.
Before you rewatch it again? Yeah.
But, it has like a great sensibility, and I don't think it's a sensibility that still sort of exists anymore. Like, people ask Weird Al about whether he'd do a sequel, and he's like, people don't really do that kind of comedy anymore.
I feel like Basketball was kind of like an unofficial, like, it kind of felt that way from this movie.
More like lewd.
Where Al's was super clean. Like, there isn't really a dirty joke in UHF.
Yeah.
It's a very family. You could show
there's
it to
an
a
innocence
kid.
To it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
And like a silliness and stupidity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think it's a really neat movie and like a good, like, product of its time. And I think, like, for Weird Al fans, and I think there's going to be like a lot more of them for many more generations. I think it's an interesting thing to sort of find and enjoy. People are always going to find it because Weird Al is way bigger than this movie. He's like, I think, eclipsed it, but like, it'll sort of like be like a good gem for people to discover. So I think it's like a totally rewatchable.
You find a Weird Al fan, a younger Weird Al fan now who knows his more current stuff. And then you, when they're old enough, you can say, "Did you know Weird Al made a movie?" And they'll go, "What?" And then you can watch all the movie.
Right. Their face will explode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about you? Did we do the rewatchable with you?
I think it's rewatchable, Nug.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it's rewatchable because there's so much going on behind the scenes too. Like you mentioned with Lego Batman, there's so many like little throwaway
there's
jokes.
Little throwaway jokes. The blueberry daiquiri, the car he's driving in this movie itself is a joke. I don't know how two people fit in that car.
That's very small.
There's
car.
So many little things, but it's worth a rewatch just to see. It's a period of its time.
Oh yeah.
And it's a period of Weird Al. It's a parody of movies and a parody of television and a parody of its genre. It's a very odd thing.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening to Rewatchability. Thanks for coming on, Nug.
Oh, thanks so much.
Do listen to the Illusionoid podcast. It's I know so we've hilarious. Been playing the ads for the last couple of weeks.
Yes. Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah. If you haven't already listened, do check it out. And we want to thank, of course, our sponsors, Endy Mattress and HelloFresh. And we also want to thank our Patreons. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. And we're on Facebook. Follow us there. Also, rate us on iTunes and give us only 5 stars. It's the only amount that you can give without contracting the terrible virus that JM has.
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatula so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City! 7 locations! We're in the yellow pages under Spatulas!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.